everybody. Good morning. Morning. Hello, everybody online. I don't know about you. I'm a gift giver. I love buying gifts and giving gifts to people. Anybody else here a gift giver? A few? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. But some people, it has to be said, are easier to buy gifts for than others, aren't they? Yeah. So, and some people, you think, what do I give to the person who's already got everything? Yeah. So I had a quick look at a website which promised to give lots of brilliant ideas that you could give to somebody who already has got everything. And I was not too impressed, to be honest. One of the ones that caught my eye, for the child whose parents are rich and who has everything, one of the suggestions was a knife. Yeah, good idea. Another idea was that you could, for $3.99, you could buy a fake million-pound note so people could pretend they're millionaires, which if they've got everything already, they might already be anyway. Anyway, and the third one, anybody a golfer here? Any golfers? Can you guess what this is? What this? Not the ball, not the golf ball. They're special golf ball finder glasses. Which, when you put them on, it helps to show up a white ball against green and brown and stuff like that, so you never lose a golf ball again. There we go. Another one that caught my eye was this one. You might not be able to see that very clearly. It's something you clip onto the top of your phone. It's a cat selfie clip with a little bell attached to it. So when you want to take that Instagram picture for your to show of you and your cat, you just shake the little bell and it makes the cat look at the camera. Cat's looking quite evil there, but cats do tend to look a bit evil, I must admit. And the one that took the biscuit for me, really, was the last one. It's a light-up dog poop bag clip. So that when you go for a walk with your dog at night, you can attach your poop bag to the dog's lead and it lights up so that you know exactly where it is. And if you think that is necessary, you should be as depressed as that dog looks there. Because that is just ridiculous, isn't it? Come on. You might as well just attach those little bags to all the bushes like all those naughty dog walkers do. Anyway, so when we think about God, now God is a bit of a difficult one, isn't he, when it comes to giving gifts. If we want to make God's day, if we want to please God, there's not a lot we can buy for him. He created everything in the first place anyway, and it all belongs to him, and he's sovereign over it. So that's no good. But the Bible does say there's something we can give to God, and that is we can give him pleasure. We can make him smile. And this isn't about being good, trying to suck up to him so that he'll be nice back to us. It's not about getting the stuff we need off him because we've been good enough. No. Because as we've seen so far in the book of Hebrews, if we've been following, nothing, not even all the elaborate legal systems and ceremonial systems that they had in Israel before the coming of Christ, nothing could make us right with God or make God be happy with sinful people. We were singing it earlier. He is a holy God. Only the resurrection after the death of Jesus, could do that for us. And the only way to benefit that from that is by faith. So if you've never done that, if you've never said to God, I'm really sorry that I've spent my life running it myself in rebellion against you, not deliberately maybe, but just because I didn't care about you or what you thought or what you did for me. If you've never said sorry to God for that, if you've never turned your life around and said, God, I want you to forgive me, please, because I believe that Jesus died on the cross to do that, and I want to live my life for you now instead. Then, unfortunately, we're not going to be making God smile. Because God says we need to, by faith, take that gift that he has laid there for us on the cross and accept it for ourselves. If we do that, the Bible says, actually, he is delighted, it says in Ephesians 1, to pour out blessing upon blessing on us and to adopt us into his family, his beloved child. Now, that does not mean he will always be pleased with us. He will always love us. But as you know, if you've got children, and I'm guessing everybody here has been a child at some point, parents aren't always happy with the way their children behave. I'm pretty sure my parents weren't happy when day after day at junior school, I used to walk home and instead of trotting over the bridge like all the other children, I would paddle through the stream and come home with wet shoes and tights. Don't ask me why. I thought it was fun. Okay. I wasn't very pleased when one of our little boys slammed a glass door shut in his temper and shattered it. I wasn't very pleased either when he threw a stone through a window in the garden just to see what would happen. And I definitely wasn't happy when the two of them managed to get the navy shoe polish out of the cupboard and scrub it all over our pale green carpet. I actually just cried. I didn't even shout at them. I just cried and phoned my mother-in-law. We all know that we mess up. We're not perfect. We're God's beloved children, but we're not perfect. But our passage says today, there's one particular way that we can please God, that we can bring pleasure to him. And that is by living a life of faith. There are other things as well, but in this passage here in Hebrews, this is what he's concentrating on. If we exercise faith throughout our Christian life, starting with accepting Jesus by faith, then the Bible says that when we have run this race of this life and we see Jesus face to face, not only will he welcome us in as his loved children, he will also be able to say to us, well done. So the passage is a very famous passage. It's Hebrews 11. You've probably read it before if you've been a Christian for any period of time. I've always been a little bit overwhelmed by it, to be honest, because it's just a massive long list of people of faith. I've never quite known how to tackle it. So thank you for the opportunity for me to study it and really think about it and talk to God about it. It's been really helpful for me. And as we know, Hebrews was written to Christians who are under pressure to renounce their faith, actually. And in this chapter, what the writer does is he takes them on a magnificent chronological journey through the Old Testament, giving example after example of people who exercised faith. And those people, it says, were commended by God for their faith. They were counted as right with him because of their faith. So what we're going to do for the rest of this morning is we're going to look at some of these people. I'm just going to pick out examples. You might want to have Hebrews 11 open in front of you because I'm not going to be able to read it all. It's a long chapter. I'm just going to pick out parts of the chapter and talk about what is it that faith actually is and what it means to be a person of faith. Now, I don't know about you, how many people in this room would like to have more faith in God? I think most of us would say yes. But faith is a hard thing to manufacture, isn't it? You can't. And the first thing that I really thought God was showing me in Hebrews 11 was that faith is about trusting God. Now, you might think, that's obvious. It's not as easy as that, though, is it, for us sometimes? I think generally, in our society at the moment, we've got quite a problem with faith and trust. I was trying to think of a list of all the people or organisations that we tend to be suspicious of in this day and age, and it's a very long list. So if somebody came up to you on the street and said, here's a free gift for you, or if it's online, you got a little email that popped up and said, oh, accept this free gift today, what would your reaction be? What's the catch? Is it a scam? But not people just giving us things. What about people asking us for things? Somebody comes up to you on the street and says, I'm sorry, can you spare any change? Or I need a lift. Would you give me a lift somewhere? If a total stranger came and did that, would you give it to them? Maybe. Who knows? You'd certainly take a good long look at them, wouldn't you, first? You can't even trust people's pictures on their profiles on social media, can you? I looked at my WhatsApp picture the other day and thought, that's a little bit misleading now. luckily, I'm not trying to find a date or anything like that, so I'm not. It's not that bad, but think about it. Politicians, do we trust their motives? Do we trust their promises? Do we trust what they say? Do we trust that they're living the life they're telling everybody else to live? No. What about AI programs? Do we even trust our children's homework anymore when they hand it in? Or has a chatbot written it for them? What about statistics that you hear? I hear statistics abused so often that I often just kind of disregard them and think, I don't even know how I can judge whether that one's true or not. What about Ofsted's judgments? Been in the news recently. How about online influencers' endorsements of products? This is so great because somebody's given me a lot of money to say this. What about big business? Do we trust big business to do the right thing? What about people who are a different class or colour from us? Are we welcoming? Or do we just avoid them? The water companies, do we trust them not to pump sewage into the rivers? No. Railway companies, do we trust them to run the trains on time? No. Banks, do we trust them to look after our money for our benefit? No. The list goes on, doesn't it? And some people, I think, just go, well, I've got to trust somebody and just pick something. You know, a conspiracy theory, an online guru. Wishful thinking, blind optimism sometimes. People just go, I'll just pick one. Or they choose a leader who's got charisma, or somebody who says what they want to hear. Or they believe something because it's a nice idea. Yes, I believe my dog's going to go to heaven. No reason for believing it. Just be nice, wouldn't it? So what about faith in God? If we know our faith in God, if we know our trust in God is a bit low, what can we do about that? You can't just say, I need to have more faith, and try and magic it up. We know if we're going to be effective in this life for God, and if we're going to please him, we need to have faith in him. We need to trust him. We need to trust his character. We need to trust his promises. We need to trust his power. But how? I think the only way to really get to trust somebody is to get to know them. It takes time, doesn't it? I once knew a girl who lied for England. She told the most enormous lies, some of them with quite serious consequences in the end. But when I first knew her, I thought, oh, that's interesting. It was only over time I realised I couldn't trust a word that came out of her mouth. But God is different. The more we get to know him, the more we get to know that we can trust him. It's in our list of heroes and heroines in Hebrews 11. It's very clear that the root of their trust in God and their faith in God was that they knew him well. It says, in verses 5 to 6, by faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Now, Enoch is really interesting because he's found back in Genesis 5. It's only a couple of sentences about him. We don't know a single thing about anything he did for God. All it says about him is that he walked with God. And that's an Old Testament sort of shorthand for saying somebody who sought intimacy with God and sought to live the way God told him to live. That's all we know about him. Didn't do anything great that is recorded in the history of Israel, which didn't exist then anyway. All we know is that he thought it was important to know God and honor him in his life. And then it talks about Sarah in verses 11 to 12. Sarah who laughed when she was told she was going to have baby. But in Hebrews 11, it says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, charming, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. In other words, Sarah might have laughed initially at the outrageousness of the fact that she who'd longed for a baby all for her life, who'd been horribly jealous of her husband's concubine who had been able to have babies, who's now well past menopause, past the hot flushes, all of that was past in the past, that she might have a baby. She laughed initially, but it says she knew that God was faithful. That time spent waiting for a baby was time in which she learned what God was like and knew he was faithful. And I just love this example of Sarah. It would have been so easy for her to go, I'm not going there again. I've had my hopes up so many times, and it's never happened. But you see, God specializes in hopeless situations. You know, the enemy wants to wreak death and destruction and chaos wherever he can. But God is able to bring life where there is none. God didn't have to choose to leave it that long with Sarah and Abram. Why on earth did he leave it till they were both really old and past the age of childbearing to be able to give them a baby? Why? Because he wanted to prove that it's his work to create life in situations where it shouldn't exist. He didn't have to choose a virgin to bear his son. He didn't need to let Daniel go into a den of lions. He didn't need to let Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go into a furnace. He wanted to show that he is the God who is master of your situation, even if it looks as if the circumstances are hopeless. In verse 2, it says that he created the universe out of nothing. He doesn't need anything to work with. He doesn't even need a sliver of ability or hope in order to make something happen. We just need to believe that he is hopeful, that he is faithful, sorry. And it says that Sarah, by her faith, received the power to conceive. If we need power to get through what we're in the middle of, we just have to believe God is faithful and be open to God's power being released in us. So how do we get to know God better? We read about who he is, what he's done in his word. We feed ourselves with the testimonies of all that God's done and the goodness and the power that God has shown to others. We remind ourselves of what he's done for us in the past. We seek him out and we spend time with him, so that we get to know without a shadow of a doubt that he's faithful and he will reward those who seek him. Second thing about faith is that faith, I think, goes even beyond just trusting God. In verse 1, at the very beginning of the chapter, it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Now, God has made promises about the future of every person who believes in him and those who don't, and the future of the whole of the creation that he's made. He may have given you specific promises for your life. I don't know. But on our own, naturally, we can't see beyond this physical world and this present moment. None of us knows what is going to happen in the next 5 minutes. It is impossible. But these verses are saying that with confidence and conviction, we can see things beyond the physical and beyond this present moment. Andrew Murray, who wrote nearly 130 years ago, said, "We need to be persuaded very deeply that faith is not only dealing with certain promises, but an unceasing spiritual intercourse with the unseen world around us. Faith is the unceasing reaching out heavenward of that spiritual sense to which things future and unseen reveal themselves as near and present, as living and powerful. Faith must in the spiritual life be as natural, as unceasing, as our breathing and seeing when we are doing our ordinary work." In other words, God's right here. We can't see it with our eyes. We can't hear him with our ears. But he's there. He's right here. And he's all around us. He's working in the lives of people around us. And the spiritual reality of heaven and the life to come in eternity, that is as real as your next birthday. How real is heaven to us? How much do we look forward to it? How much do we live in the confidence that God will bring everything under his rule one day and he'll right every wrong? God chooses to treat us as friends and let us in on his plans. It says that Abraham was given a glimpse of God's great big plan of salvation that was going to come into effect thousands of years after he lived. Plans to bless the whole world through his descendants. And it says that he was given a glimpse even of things further ahead than that, because he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. So by faith, we learn to look beyond what is visible to God's activity in the world around us. Now, we say this sometimes from the front. We need to see what God is doing in the world and join in with it. Do we actually believe that God is at work in the world? Do we see it? Maybe we don't see very much of it. I know for myself, when I don't, it's because I am too caught up in the here and now, in the visible things. I don't always take the trouble to develop the eyes and ears of faith to hear and see God's activity around me. On Friday night, I was on street pastor duty. Francoise over here was part of our lovely prayer team who cover us in prayer as we go around the streets of Rugby. We go out about 10:30, and in Rugby on Friday night, it's quite often quite quiet, especially now with the cost of living crisis biting. It was very quiet. We did really have a single conversation in the first half. So we decided to go back early to base and have a cup of tea, bit of cake, and then go out again, hopefully when it was busier, because it really only gets busy after midnight. And just as we were going out, me and one of the other street pastors, Steve, we just prayed as we were walking along into the town centre, and we said, Lord, lead us to somebody who's hungry for you. And almost the first person we talked to was a young woman, single mum, with two little kids, a lot of challenges, who said to us, I believe in what you believe, and I pray, you know. I pray, and when I pray, things go better, and when I don't pray, things go really badly, and I really want to do something about it. And it turns out she used to come, I presume to Regenerate, she said she used to come to Beck on Tuesday evenings as a teenager, and then moved away, so she didn't come to Beck anymore. But there's something in her. God's put something in her. A hunger, a belief that God can help her when things are tough. She's reaching out to him. We were able to give her a tract, talk with her, pray with her, and hopefully put her in touch with a church where she can go to. But God is at work in that young woman. I very much doubt she's the only one. But it was only because I was on street pastor duty and I prayed, and we had people praying with us in the background, that I was aware of God at work in the unseen, in the invisible. How much more would we be able to be used by God if we exercise that kind of faith? If at work, if in our home, if when we're going shopping, if we're doing the garden and see the neighbours, we're asking God to show us the unseen and where he's at work. We need to be expectant. We need to be attentive. You know, when we introduce the idea of bless, some habits that can help us in reaching out to people who don't know Jesus yet, the very first thing is begin with prayer. Because it's only as we bring ourselves to God and say, I'm available, what do you want me to do? That we become aware of where he is at work. The third thing that I think we learn from this chapter is that faith gives it all, leaves it all out there. One of the most striking characteristics of these people in this list is their willingness to obey God and sacrifice everything they've got for the sake of something greater. They were ordinary people. We know they were flawed people. I don't know if they're so happy about all of that being in the Bible, but it helps us, doesn't it? They were ordinary people who knew God. They saw beyond the present. They saw beyond what was visible, and they were willing to do extraordinary things. Abel, brother of Cain, gave God the best of what he had. Noah built a great big boat on dry land. Abraham left his family. He left his home. Didn't even know where he was going. God didn't even give him the destination when he set off. And he was even prepared to give up his beloved son that God had promised would seed a nation. And Moses gave up his status in the court of Pharaoh, gave up every pleasure he could have wanted and wealth beyond most people's dreams. It says, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Faith is about recognizing that this body, this life, they're just temporary homes. And that we're strangers in a foreign land. We don't try to fit in and hold on to what we can, because that's not what matters. And it won't last anyway. Faith is a daily choice to do our part in the mission of God, to bring history to the true end that he has ordained for it. Faith isn't all about us, just having faith that God will look out for us and keep us comfortable. It's about a constant giving up of our own interests for the sake of the kingdom. I've been thinking about how surrendered to God am I right now compared to when I first came to faith. Are we as sold out as we were? It isn't an inevitability of older age that we somehow settle for being comfortable. I ask the question, when was the last time I actually heard God tell me to do something and I did it? The quality of a marriage isn't determined by the promise we made on our wedding day. It's determined by the way we live out that promise every day. And the quality of our discipleship and our faith is not what we promised to God when we became a Christian. It's how are we living that out every single day. But the encouragement for us is that it's not necessarily about doing all big things for God either. Ultimately, when you think about Abraham's life, what he did was earn a living. He was a nomadic herdsman living in a tent, and he raised a family to believe in God's promises. That's what he did. Faith is about doing what he asks us to do because it's him who's asking it. And finally, I'd say faith fears no one. Fear is the enemy of faith, isn't it? When we're scared, it paralyzes us. It stops us taking action. It can make us defensive. It can make us suspicious. It can make us harsh. And it can make us unloving because we might be hurt. If we believe the lie that we can create our own security, then we will close ranks against anyone or anything that could threaten that illusion. We will try to live as comfortably and as safely as we can. Paul Tillich said that he who risks and fails can be forgiven. He who never risks and never fails is a failure in his whole being. Noah didn't care about ridicule. Moses' parents and the midwives who refused to kill the Israelite children on the order of the state didn't care about the punishment they could have faced. Moses didn't fear the revenge of Pharaoh for allying himself with a different people. Daniel didn't fear the lions. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't fear the furnace. Rahab didn't fear being caught and killed as a traitor to her own city in Jericho. Or maybe there was some fear, but something else was stronger. I think God is asking his church to live more adventurously for the kingdom and risk some backlash for it. And if we're going to do that, we're going to have to overcome fear and anxiety and timidity. Those are not of God. That's not what his spirit gives us. But the only way, I think, to overcome fear is to be overwhelmed by something bigger and better that drives us. A deep knowledge of God's goodness and power is bigger than fear. An awareness of the temporary nature of this life and its troubles gives us perspective on our fears. A sense of urgency about working with God to see people saved from the clutches of Satan is bigger than fear. A few years ago, there was a woman in Florida who was startled by a huge alligator which had strayed out of a bayou and appeared really close to her. And most people would run away straight away. She rushed forward and started thumping it on the nose as hard as she could. and she kept thumping until the alligator backed off and slithered away. Why would anybody do such a crazy thing? Because that alligator had grabbed hold of her little boy. And she was not going to stop fighting until the alligator let go of him. It reminded me of David saying that when he was a shepherd and a lion or a bear came for his lambs, he would snatch them out of their mouths. Because he wanted those sheep safe. Are we driven by that kind of urgency to help see people saved from hell, from judgment, from their own mess? Because what's the worst thing the alligator can do? It can send us to the Lord quicker. And I'm not being flippant there. If we want to please the Lord, we will live by faith and trust, rooted in a deep knowledge of who he is and how good he is. We will look beyond the present. We will look beyond the visible to the spiritual realities of the future. We will give all we've got to serve him while we're here, because he's worth it. And we'll be fearless in joining him with his mission to save the world. So, what can we do to grow in faith and please God? Maybe something I've said this morning has resonated with you. We'll spend a few minutes just with you doing business with God. But I just want to say it starts with putting your faith in Jesus Christ, in his blood, in his death on the cross for you. Without that, it's impossible to please God. So please, if you've never done it, but you know that God is real, like Enoch, you know he's real and that he does reward those who seek him, then please, don't ignore what he's asking of you. You can trust him. It's not easy, but it's amazing. 2 Corinthians 5 says, while we live in these earthly bodies, we groan and sigh. But it's not that we want to die and get rid of these bodies that clothe us. Rather, we want to put on our new bodies so that these dying bodies will be swallowed up by life. God himself has prepared us for this. And as a guarantee, he has given us his Holy Spirit. So we are always confident. Even though we know that as long as we live in these bodies, we are not at home with the Lord. For we live by believing and not by seeing. Yes, we are fully confident. And whether we are here in this body or away from this body, our goal is to please him. Hallelujah.